I can't tell you because we don't know yet. I've just on the website at the moment, and they haven't put up the witness list. So, but the hearing will cover the Christian Brothers, the schools in Ballarat, and so we would expect to hear from some of the victims who would be giving witness statements, and then also some, possibly some of the perpetrators that certainly happened in the second hearing, or the first hearing in May, and maybe some of the clerics who were responsible for overseeing the movement of clerics in those schools.
And what might the potential consequences be for members of the church who have found to have covered up abuse?
Well, that's an interesting question. Currently, the Royal Commission has sent at least at last look over 700 individuals to the Department of Public Prosecutions for possible prosecution and criminal charges, but none of that has sort of, well, it's not public at the moment, so we don't know. And we expect that some of those cases would involve clerics who had covered up abuse.
Right, and you're analysing institutional secrecy surrounding abuse within the Catholic Church. Can you explain a little bit about that?
I'm analysing the Catholic Church at the Royal Commission, so I'm attending the hearings that involve the Catholic Church. And the reason that I'm doing that is because, well, I'm a sociologist of religion and gender, and I became very interested in the Catholic Church because it's the worst offender at the Royal Commission. And I wanted to understand why the church had so many problems. I mean, we're talking about, when we talk about institutional child sexual abuse, we're talking across major institutions in Australian life. So it's not just the churches and faith organisations, it's also sporting groups, cultural groups, scouting groups, and so on. But for some reason, the church, the Catholic Church, has had the hardest time with this issue. So when I started doing my research, I went to the institution itself to look at the way it was structured, and what I found was that there was a culture of secrecy, that in fact priests who were offending, clerics who were offending, weren't reported to the police. They were moved around from parish to parish and school to school where they further offended. So, you know, hundreds, thousands and thousands of children have been affected by this. And, you know, this is all through, from the 1950s onwards, that's when the records go back to, peaking in the 70s and the 80s. So it's pretty recent. In fact, one of the case studies, case study 15, I think it was a case study of a Catholic school teacher in Toowoomba who had been sexually assaulting Year 6 girls. And that was 1997. So it's probably a mistake to think of this as being just historical. It's actually fairly current, really. And the Royal Commission, if you look at the website, you'll see that all the work that they've done, they are addressing this issue: how can we keep children safe?
And so, your research is concerned particularly with the responses to abuse within a gendered framework.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So one of the things that I've been looking at in the Catholic Church is the way that gender operates. And if you look carefully, you'll see that institutionally you get what I'm calling clerical masculinity developing. And that is that it's an institution that is very top-heavy with men, celibate men at the top. And, well, we know this for a fact, of course. And that the way that power is organised in that institutional setting is that clerical men, particularly bishops and archbishops, have enormous power to determine agendas and canon law and how things will be dealt with and so on. So this kind of clerical masculinity is very interesting because it's different from other kinds of masculinity, and it requires... Well, certainly the formation programs of priesthood and of brotherhood were not very good programs in terms of helping men understand sexuality, helping men understand how sociality worked, how to be social, and also celibacy was a real issue because it was an enforced form of celibacy. So it did create this culture where of enormous loneliness for a lot of men, and there have been some really interesting studies that have been done by sociologists and anthropologists on the effects of celibacy on this whole cohort of men. And some in some ways that had disastrous effects because there was a group of men, of course, who it just became pathological, and their way of responding to that was to hurt children.
Now, Kathleen, one thing that is coming up is that Cardinal George Pell is expected to be giving evidence in about a week. He's also just on the news this morning, I heard that he cited that he probably won't be returning to Sydney for health reasons. Can we expect his testimony or his evidence to be quite significant?
Look, it's really hard to tell. I don't know. This will be the third time that Cardinal Pell has given evidence at the Royal Commission, and I have heard his evidence on the two other occasions, and that was very disappointing. He didn't have any answers to the question of responsibility, and the reason that he is such an important figure is because, first of all, he was the most senior cleric in Australia for a long time. He was a cardinal. Second of all, he was Archbishop of Melbourne during the time when many of the reports of child sexual abuse were coming in. And thirdly, he lives in Ballarat. He grew up in Ballarat, and he lived in the presbytery where the most notorious clerical paedophile, Gerald Ridsdale, lived. So he lived with him during that time when Ridsdale was abusing children in the presbytery. So there, people have a lot of questions about Ballarat to ask Cardinal Pell, I'm sure the commission does. Whether there will be any answers is another question altogether.